Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of Did You Hear That? I'm so glad you decided to join me today. This is going to be kind of like a one-shot. I do not plan on listening back to this, so if you hear anything that is clearly a fuck-up, I do apologize. I figure this is probably one of the very few ways that I'm able to do something like this, because these are usually like half an hour segments, and while I do kind of like if this was like an actual like audio roleplay script, right? Like I would actually take the time to go back and listen to all my stuff. But this one, it's not. There's less people who listen to it. And I would say that only the diehards of my Patreon listen to this kind of stuff. So the diehards are going to listen to it regardless, right? In fact, you might even you might even prefer my fuck ups. I don't know. So there is no editing. There is going to be noise in the background. Like, for example, Mika is right here on my desk, and she might meow. I apologize for that. Just consider it another bit of the ambiance, right? Okay, so let's get to it. So grab your favorite drink or snuggle with your favorite blanket, get comfortable, and let's dive into something that has a topic that has been asked for quite some time. Today, we are, as you probably already know, unless you're one of those people that puts these into a playlist and then just goes in blind, literally, we're going underground, literally. We're exploring the Paris Catacombs, one of the most haunting and mesmerizing places on Earth, bar none. And don't worry, I'm going to try to not make this some dry history lecture, okay? I want to talk to you about this place like we're just having coffee together, because honestly, this is kind of fun. It's kind of interesting, and it's kind of something that you know, maybe talk about with your friends, because we're friends, right? You and I? Yeah. What is all this parasocial nonsense? I don't believe in that. Anyways, so I think the Paris Catacombs are... And this is where I'm going to get weirdly philosophical, but I think they are a profound statement about humanity, memory, and how we cope with our own mortality. So, you know, when most people think about Paris, you know, like think about Paris for a second, okay? What's the first thing that comes to your mind? Probably... If you're not a complete degenerate, probably just ask some normal person or ask Ender. Yeah. I didn't mean to call him out like that. I'm sorry. He's like the only normal person, though. Everyone is, or, you know, whatever. Okay, so when most people think about Paris, you know, they think about the Eiffel Tower and the cafes with the snooty waiters and waitresses and the Louvre and those cobblestone streets and the pickpockets and the Vespas and the bad tourists and, you know. But, you know, going back to the topic, beneath those cobblestone streets is something that is not as romantic or beautiful or picturesque as the Eiffel Tower. Beneath those streets lies a sprawling empire of the dead, housing the remains of more than 6 million people. That's a lot of people. So, let's start with the basics. Why on earth does Paris have tunnels filled with neatly stacked human bones? And just in case you're wondering, I am working off a script, okay? But I'm kind of like adding my own little flares here and there so it doesn't sound completely dry. But if I did not approach this topic without a script, we'd go nowhere. Much like those tunnels. But I digress. All right, so why does Paris have tunnels with bones and shit, okay? It's actually, it started off as being a very practical solution to a very real problem. So in the late 18th century, so in the late, like, 1700s, Paris had a very big problem, and that was the city cemeteries were literally overflowing, okay? I'm not being metaphorical here, but, like, literally, in some cases, decomposing bodies were actually breaking through the walls of people's cellars and basements. Can you imagine? You're just going down and grab a bottle of wine and suddenly, well, you get the picture. So The worst offender of this was the Cemetery of the Innocents, which, or Les Innocents, something, I don't know, maybe Luna will tell you what that means. Anyway, so, or what it is in French, because she's the only person I know that speaks French on the server. Anyways, I've had a lot of coffee, okay? So, the Cemetery of the Innocents had been in use for nearly 10 centuries, which is, like, you know, come on, what's a century? Like, 100 years, right? Wait, that doesn't make any sense. A century is 100 years. Okay, so 10 centuries. That's a lot, okay? Gee, no shit, Sherlock. Anyways, by the 1780s, it was estimated that this single cemetery contained the remains of anywhere between 2 and 6 million Parisians, all crammed into a space that was never designed to hold that many bodies. So the situation came to a head. Oh, that's a really bad choice of words there. After a particularly rainy season in 1780, when a basement wall adjacent to the cemetery collapsed and, well, you know, the wine thing, you know, you go downstairs to get a bottle of wine. Yeah, that actually happened. So it's kind of crazy to think about it, right? This wasn't some medieval problem. This was happening during the Enlightenment, when Paris was supposed to be the center of modern thinking and innovation. So what did they do? What does any 7-year-old do when you tell them you got to, you know, they got to clean their fucking room? They start sweeping everything under the fucking bed, don't they? So these Parisians, they looked beneath the city. Paris had these extensive limestone quarries that had been mined for centuries to build the city above. And these are like the white blocks that you see in a lot of the old architecture. So these old mines, you know, they created like this huge network of tunnels and chambers. So basically, they built a city below the city. Sounds like a pretty perfect solution, right? So starting in 1786, under the cover of darkness, because could you imagine if they did this during the day, priests would leave processions of wagons filled with bones from the cemeteries through the streets of Paris. At first, they just dumped the bones in, but later they began to arrange them in the orderly artistic patterns that we see today in the curated part of the tunnels, which is not that long compared to the actual tunnel systems. Anyway, so you could go on YouTube and look this up, but then that requires you to actually like get up and then go on YouTube and then look it up, or you can just lay there, sit there, whatever, drive your car and just let me paint a picture for you of what it's like to visit these catacombs today. I've never been, but I have seen a lot of documentaries and YouTube videos. So I was, you know, even if you're not there, it's still quite an amazing experience, right? So you go through this really unassuming door. It's just a plain fucking door, right? It's nothing dramatic, no Gothic archway or anything. It's just a regular door that you might walk past without a single step. Or without a single glance, sorry. And then you walk down the spiral staircase. It's 130 steps down, and that was in the video. So otherwise, I don't know how I, yeah. Anyways, so obviously, as you go down deeper, the temperature gets colder. And that's the moment when I think people realize that they're not in Kansas anymore. Like, you're beneath the Paris metro, you're beneath the sewers, you're beneath everything that makes up modern Paris. Because 100 steps down, 130 steps down, that's pretty far. I don't know about you, but that's pretty fucking far. Anyway, so you walk through some relatively plain limestone tunnels for a while. And then you come to this doorway with an inscription that reads, Arrêt, c'est ici l'Empire de la Mort. I am sorry, my French is shit. Anyways, in English, that means stop. This is the Empire of Death. It's like something out of a horror movie, except it's real and it's just there. So then you cross the threshold and it's just row after row and wall after wall of human bones. Femurs and tibias stacked like firewood with rows of skulls arranged in patterns, sometimes hearts or crosses. It's incredibly artistic and deeply unsettling, which, you know, is Paris in a nutshell. So the tunnels, they go on for what feels like forever. But not really, though, because the official tour only covers about a mile of the catacombs. But I'm telling you, a mile down there probably feels like a lot, right? But the actual entire network of the Paris catacombs spans nearly 200 miles. Just think about that for a second, okay? 200 miles of tunnels beneath one of the world's most famous cities. Many of those tunnels filled with the remains of people who have lived and died centuries ago. So what I learned about that, about the tunnels, it's actually kind of interesting. The temperature and the humidity it's perfectly controlled down there. According to the videos that I've seen and the research that I read, it's like 57 degrees Fahrenheit, 365 days. You can feel the moisture in the air, and there's this earthy mineral smell that's apparently really, like, I mean, like, come on. Anyone who's been in a basement or underground, you know that smell. It's not unpleasant, but it's there, right? So while you're walking, like, you'll hear water dripping in some sections. And sometimes it falls right onto a skull that's been sitting there for over two centuries. That's 200 years for those of you who don't know what a century means, like me, apparently. So it's this constant reminder that even in death, time doesn't stop. Everything keeps changing. Even if it's just a slow drip of water reshaping a limestone ceiling or slowly eroding a human skull. Now, the catacombs aren't just a burial site. They've clearly become this incredible cultural icon. They've inspired countless artists, writers, filmmakers, and musicians. Victor Hugo mentioned them in Les Miserables. It's okay if you're going to die laughing. Just don't choke, okay? And then part of The Phantom of the Opera, which was popularized by Andrew Lloyd Webber, but was actually written by Gaston Leroux. Part of the opera, or part of the story, takes place in the tunnels beneath Paris. And obviously, it's a fairly popular topic in horror stories, such as As Above, So Below, which has one of my like low-key favorite actors, Ben, I think, from Superstore. He's in it. I liked it. Anyway, so, and if you do get the chance, please watch As Above, So Below. It's actually a pretty good horror movie. Although, clearly people do make some pretty dumb choices, but what are horror movies without dumb choices, right? So what's fascinating to me, though, is how the catacombs blur the line between history and legend. They're a documented historical solution to a very real problem, but they've also become like this really mythic step, like space in our collective imagination. So there's even like this whole like subculture of cataphiles, and cataphiles is short for catacomb philiacs, you know, people who really like the catacombs. Basically, they are urban explorers who have snuck into the restricted sections of the tunnels. They've discovered and, or in some cases, like, created incredible things down there. So, like, secret rooms, underground art galleries, even, like, fully furnished spaces where people host, like, raves and shit. So, like, imagine having, like, a drink, getting drunk in, like, an underground chamber surrounded by, like, centuries-old human remains. It's pretty fucking wild, right? So, in 2004, people discovered something truly bizarre. A fully functioning cinema room, complete with a projector, screen, and seating for about, supposedly, like 20 people. There was even a bar and a restaurant area. Someone had managed to wire electricity into the space without being detected. The entry had a sign that read, "No public or private group may trespass in this location or prevent its use for the specific purposes." When the police returned a few days later to investigate further, everything had been removed, except for a note that said, "Do not try to follow us." Also, I think it's kind of wild. The Paris Police Department have their own, like Paris Catacombs Police, like, department. It's actually pretty fucking cool. Anyway, so it's kind of crazy, though, right? Like, there are parts of the catacombs that even the authorities don't know about. And they can't control it either, right? So it's like this secret world that exists beneath one of the most beautiful cities on Earth. Like, one of my headcanon is, like, there's, like, just, like, this really grizzled, like, retired, like, cataphile who becomes a cop. And, you know, he, like, knows all, like, the secret stuff. And, like, he's, yeah, okay, you get it. You get it, right? So there, obviously, so with a place like this, there's obviously going to be, like, a lot of legends, right? And a lot of stories. Some people claim to have seen ghosts down there, which, I mean, it's pretty much a given, right? It's basically a massive tomb. Others report hearing whispers or feeling like they're being watched. There's that really famous YouTube video. It's not YouTube, but about 30 years ago, someone got lost in the Paris catacombs. They were obviously in a restricted area of the tunnels. And there's footage of their camcorder as they're going through the tunnels. And like the footage that I was able to see, you could clearly hear the person who was filming it. His breathing is labored. They clearly are not having a great time. And then like a few minutes later, like, they're running too, right? Like, you can hear their, like, hurried footsteps. They just drop the camcorder in, like, some water, and then they just run off. And someone found the video footage. But the person who filmed the video footage either never came forward to say, yeah, hey, that's my camcorder. And I don't know why they would say that or why they wouldn't say that. I mean, it's kind of a big thing, right? Or they just died somewhere in the tunnels, which I think is the more probable thing, because people do that. They die even in the tunnels. Anyways, so going back to the stories, one of the most famous stories of the tunnels involves Philibert Asper, and I'm so sorry if I butcher the French names. I failed French in high school. Anyways, so he disappeared in the catacombs in 1793, and his body wasn't discovered until 11 years later, which is better than the guy who lost his camcorder because his body still hasn't been found. Anyway, so Philibert, he supposedly got lost while looking for a cellar of liqueur made by monks. And they found his body like 11 years later near an exit, which, you know, suggests that he almost made it out. So now there is a memorial to him in the catacombs, a permanent reminder of how easy it is to get lost in that labyrinth. And, you know, there's something both kind of terrifying and but also kind of comforting about getting lost somewhere like that. Like terrifying for obvious reasons, you know, obviously it's dark as fuck down there, you know, whatever. But it's comforting in the sense that you're not the only one that's dealing with that, you know? People have been getting lost, like, in caves and forests in their own minds since, like, you know, they were people. I wanted to go somewhere with that, but I lost my train of thought, so. Anyways, do you want to know what I find most fascinating, though, about the Paris catacombs? I think what I find the most interesting is probably the anonymity of it all. The bones in the catacombs aren't labeled or identified in any way. Like, rich, poor, young, old, criminal, or, like, the fucking Pope. they were all just, I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe the Pope was a criminal. I don't know. But anyways, they were all just bones now, arranged in these super intricate patterns. There's something really, like, democratic about death, isn't it? It's, that's why they call it the Great Equalizer. So when you walk through these tunnels, like, think about how each skull that is in there once contained someone's entire world, like their dreams, their fears, their loves, their memories. Each of those skulls had days when they were happy, days when they were devastated, moments when they felt invincible, and moments when they felt completely lost, just like us. So I think that's honestly why places like the Paris Catacombs resonate so deeply with not only me, but like a bunch of other people. I'm sure you're probably interested, right? I mean, this is not just a historical curiosity or a macabre tourist attraction. The Paris Catacombs are a mirror that shows us something fundamental about ourselves and our shared humanity. They remind us that life is temporary, that civilizations rise and fall, and that even our most pressing problems are just momentary concerns in the grand scheme of things. Shit just doesn't matter, man. But also, they connect us to something larger than ourselves. When you're standing in those tunnels, you are surrounded by the remains of millions of people who have lived centuries before you. And it's impossible not to feel like you're part of an ongoing human story. Like, those people lived through revolutions and plagues and wars and their own personal, like, shit, you know? And now here we are, like, living through our own. There's a inscription in one part of the catacombs that I just kind of stopped at. And in French, it's, or actually, it could be in Latin, I don't know. But I was reading it, and it says, Dia Irae, Dia Ila, which, you know, sorry, I butchered it. But it roughly translates to Day of Wrath, that day. So it's from a medieval hymn about the Last Judgment. And I think that's kind of heavy, you know? But I don't think it's meant to, like, scare people. I think it's meant for the living to remind ourselves to live every day like it is our last. As long as you don't hurt other people, right? And that's the thing about, I think, confronting mortality. It doesn't have to be depressing. It can actually be incredibly motivating. Like, if you learned that you were going to die tomorrow, what would you do? I think that if I found out that I was going to die tomorrow, I would do a bunch of things. I might hold up a bank, maybe go running naked through the streets, because fuck it, why not? I'm going to die tomorrow anyways. Maybe not go... tell the guy that lives down the street from me, who looks just like fucking Steve Harrington from Stranger Things, hey man, you look like that Netflix show that I really like, because I've never been able to say it, because it's weird that you would say that to some stranger. But I would do that. So I, like... Yeah, and, you know, and like when you like truly understand that your time is limited, you would definitely start making different choices about how you spend your remaining, you know, hours, right? So once you get out of the catacombs, you emerge into the light, you know, you're back into the bustling world of the living, and I'm sure everything probably seems a lot brighter, probably smells either better or worse, depending on where you come out. Probably a lot brighter too, right? Like vivid, like more saturated. I mean, the cafes are still there, the pickpockets, the bad tourists, people are rushing by on their scooters and, you know, life basically, right? So life continues, oblivious to the empire of death that exists just beneath its feet. So it's like the infamous words of Ian Malcolm. Life finds a way. And I think there's something absolutely beautiful about that juxtaposition. Life and death, past and present, all coexisting in the same place. It's a reminder that even in a city as old and storied as Paris, because Paris has been around for, I mean, obviously, like, millennia minimum, right? There are still secrets to discover in that vast city that has seen so much life and so much death. There's still so many stories to uncover, and that is really fucking cool, I think. Anyways, well, I've been yapping for about 25 minutes? Huh. I thought I'd be talking for longer. But I think I've done enough existential pondering for one episode. If you ever get the chance to visit Paris, please go. Take pictures. I want to see it. Put it up on the Discord. But after you go, maybe you want to do something like fun, like go eat a croissant at a bakery and get sniffed at by a snooty waiter because he asked for coffee afternoon. I don't fucking know, right? Anyways, next topic. I'm thinking of covering like 411 case or something. Or I also kind of want to cover like the Red Room, Kakurenbo something. I don't know. There's something that someone posted, and I fucking love like Japanese urban legends, right? Or Korean urban legends. I just love covering urban legends in general. The only reason I'm really covering the Paris catacombs is because it's been posited a few times, and I keep saying yes, I'll do it. Yes, I'll do it. And I never did it. I never did it, but I did it now. So that's off my to-do list. Anyways, thank you so much for listening. This has been episode like 9 or 10 of Did You Hear That? And thank you so much for continuing to be a patron of my Patreon. Your support makes it possible for me to do fun shit like this and, you know, continue to gamble with anime merch so I'm literally buried under rubber charms and hand towels. Take care of yourselves and I will see you in the next audio. Bye, guys.